welcome to Voice of Albion on Renegade Broadcasting. Today's date is the 22nd of December 2014. Tonight I'm joined by a Latvian nationalist who is the Secretary General and a member of the board for the National Alliance Latvia, which includes two former parties, the All for Latvia Party and For Fatherland and Freedom. Rīvis Zeltis, thanks for coming on.
It is my pleasure.
Great. Just a quick announcement before we get started, Rīvis. There is a Gary Yardborough demo in London, which is a free Gary Yardborough, the member of the order, and that is on the 17th of the 1st, 2015. So people should look out for that. Rīvis, you are studying at the Latvian University Faculty of History and Philosophy. I'd like to ask you first about some historical periods in your country's past.
Sure thing, yes.
Thanks. In the early medieval period, the region's peoples resisted Christianization and became subject to attack in the Northern Crusades. Today's Latvian capital, Riga, was founded in 1201 by Teutonic Knights. The area became a strategic base in a papally sanctioned conquest of the Livonian Brothers of the Sword. Could you tell us about this Northern Crusade in the 13th century and also the Livonian Brothers of the Sword?
Yes, well, traditionally this process is viewed as negative by Latvian nationalists, but as a historian I try to look at it at the bigger picture. Of course, there was negative occurrences that harmed the local tribes during these wars, but it was the Middle Ages when war was normality, and these brothers of sword, they were just another enemy or just another ally, depending on the tribes. What is important for me, I think this was a process of westernization. These crusades were a question of in which civilization these Baltic tribes will later be part of. Will it be the Western civilization or the Russian, which was dominated by the Mongols at that time? Or, to put it more clearly, the question was whether there will be Latvians in the future or there would not be. So I look at it in that way. About these Livonian Brothers of Sword, they were like many other warrior organizations at that time, warrior monks, and first, they were pretty independent, but later, when the local tribes defeated them in the Battle of Saule, they became part of the Teutonic Order, which was located mainly in Prussia, and they had ties with all the other German orders.
Yeah, so I find this very interesting, Rīvis, because we all know about the Knights Templar in the Middle East and all this kind of thing, but people don't tend to talk about this kind of Teutonic Northern Crusades. And the thing I find interesting is practically everywhere else in Europe, as far as I know, had already become Christian. And you had this small area in the Baltic which kept the pagan beliefs.
Yes, it was pretty unique, but comparing to Lithuania, Lithuania was Christianized many centuries later, and it was one of the biggest states in Europe in the Middle Ages. It was a pagan state, so this is unknown history for many, I think, in Europe.
Continue, please.
Yes.
Sorry.
Sure. Also, I think it's important that in Western Europe and also in Central Europe, the main idea that unites the nation is the idea of the Christianization, it was a start of the nation, like in Poland. The history of Poland for Polish people starts with the Christians. In Baltic states, it was other way around. These crusaders were looked as oppressors, and this paganism, well, it was like a part of the real national identity.
Yes, and am I correct in saying that Prussia came about because the Pope says to the Northern Crusaders, the Teutonic Knights, if you make that area Christian, we'll give you land out of Poland, and that is how Prussia came about.
Yes, it was something like that. But these Livonian brothers or other organizations, they were very independent. The Pope gave the orders and waited for loyalty, but it was thousands of kilometers from Rome in some northern regions. Of course, they were pretty independent. They had their own state, I would say, in Prussia and in Livonia later.
Yes. Okay, well, I read about a tribe called the Curonians. Curonians. Apparently, the Curonians strongly resisted the Livonian Crusade. Who were the Curonians?
The Curonians, or Kurši, as we say in Latvian, they were one of the Baltic tribes. They were like Prussians, Western Baltic tribe. And they are interesting that they had this Viking lifestyle. They were warriors and sailors at the same time. And they were also the only Baltic people who practiced burning of their dead ones. They were famous for their battles with Scandinavians, and after the Scandinavians were Christianized and Baltic people were the last pagans, they were the biggest threat in Baltic Sea, and everyone was afraid of them.
That was the kind of impression I got, not knowing too much about them. Isn't there still a place in Latvia today which is named after them?
Yes, it's one of the most, how do you say, most Latvian regions. Also, people from this region are very tempered. They fight strongly about their interests. It's interesting that they still have these qualities of warriors in everyday life.
Is there any kind of Curonian heroes, because I couldn't really find any heroes or sagas that people might want to look up or are interested in this?
Well, this history was written by our enemies at that time, so all we know is what the Germans wrote or the Scandinavians wrote, so there are not a lot of names or kings that we know.
I was trying to find something, and I ended up on the Icelandic sagas, and I thought, well, I'm getting a bit lost here. I don't know where Iceland comes into it.
maybe as a part of Denmark, which was Denmark at the time was one of the biggest countries in that region, and they were at war often with the Curonians.
Yeah, there's kind of a whole extreme north history, which we don't seem to know much about.
Well, yes, but I think in the TV series Vikings, in the first episode, there were Curonians, so I think they...
Was there really?
Yes, they spoke in some weird Latvian language.
That's a great series, isn't it?
Yes, but I found it interesting that they also have found about Curonians. So I think Latvian history could be interesting for many Americans also.
Indeed. Well, due to the position of Latvia, it has always had strategic importance for neighbouring powers, mostly the state of the Teutonic Order, which later became Germany, the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, Sweden, or the Swedish Empire, and Russia. During the Northern War, around 1710, control of Latvia switched from Sweden to Russia. Could you talk a little about the Northern War and the consequences of the Russian victory, please?
Yes, it was a part of many strategic conflicts in that region. Livonia, as I mentioned, was a part of Western civilization, and later it chose to be part of Polish-Lithuanian state instead of Russia. Later, Vidzeme region was annexed by Sweden, and at the time, Russia emerged as a great regional power, and Peter the Great wanted to make a window to Europe, as we know, through Latvia. So it ended as a conflict between the Russia and Sweden, and it was a cruel war, and with a lot of casualties, and mainly from the Russian side. The result was a victory for Russia. It also made it one of the greatest powers in Europe, but for Latvians it meant to be largely uprooted from the general developments in Europe. The local German minority still maintained their status and continued to be influential, so they had a great role in Latvia until the end of 19th century, when the real Russification started.
Yeah, something occurs to me, Rivas. Do you think, because I know the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth, they was also the Poles in Lithuania, Ukraine for a long time. The Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth controlled Ukraine, and you had this kind of Polish elite in Ukraine, and you had a similar thing in the Baltic with the German elite. Do you think, in a way, now we are moving on and understand the New World Order in these things, that there's always been this kind of elite which, whether they're German or Polish or Lithuanian, there was never really on our side? Do you know what I mean by that?
How do I get the idea? But, the elites are always there. It's just natural for them to be. In this case, it wasn't secret elite. It was everybody knew who they were. And
not like what happened in Russia after 1917. Not that kind of elite. The Jewish Bolshevik elite.
It's not my period of time, so I don't know about that. I wouldn't want to comment. But it was mainly German elite in Latvia. It was for 7th century, so it was. It's hard to understand that only, but for less than a century, we don't have this German elite that we lived with for centuries. It's interesting that.
Well, the German elite seems to have made a fine country of Latvia, and strong people, well educated, nice buildings, this kind of thing.
Yes, I think now we only start to understand their positive influence. It was a negative national myth, I think, to blame Germans for these crusades, for oppression. If you look at it more objectively, they had, I think, a great role in the whole region. And if it wasn't for them, we, as I mentioned, would be part of another civilization. So
yes. Well, there's not many people you can think of who beat the Roman Empire back time and time again. Rome never took Germany, did they? What is now Germany?
No, they didn't.
There's something about those people, isn't there? There's good European, strong people, intelligent people.
I think yes. I think Latvians have much in common about Baltic tribes in general. So Latvians are always offended when people compare them with, Russians, or they call Latvians a Slavic tribe. Well, Baltic people see ourselves as a part of this northern Western European culture,
Nordic slash Germanic, kind of.
yes, you could say that,
Slash
with the
Baltic.
Hanseatic League, all the history with also Protestantism and all these ideas that we look at obvious. It's not that obvious when you look at the other side of the border, where you still see the despotism of the Eastern culture in the
That's right.
person of Putin.
Yes. Okay, well, Latvian nationalist movements seem to start around the 1850s. I read about the first Latvian national awakening. This refers to a national revival led by the young Latvians from 1850 to the 1880s. Could you tell us about this, please?
Yes, these young Latvians, they actually used the German model of national awakening, but they used it against these Germans, actually, themselves. It was possible only because Latvians were one of the most educated people, not only in Russian Empire, but in all the Europe, and it was because of this German influence. Because they were very interested that local peasants were educated, and they saw it as enlightenment to understand the Christianity. So, but it actually what happened was that Latvians were becoming more educated, and they started to work with the material of our own nation. They worked in many directions. They developed literary language. They researched our tales and folk songs. They also worked for Latvians to be economically more independent. But the negative side was that they underestimated the threat from Russia. They were concentrating on the Germans, and they didn't see that there was another enemy, actually.
Yeah, so it sounds more of a kind of the national awakening was like a cultural type of thing.
It was mainly cultural. At that time, there wasn't any political demands. It was far too early for that. There wasn't that many people who were politically aware. It was a small elite,
Yes.
As we know, elites tend to be very important. So it was
Sure.
few students, mainly people in the cities, but it was too early for to become mass political movement.
I understand. Then in the 1890s, a Rusification policy was started by Alexander the Third. The aim was to reduce the autonomy of the Baltic provinces and the introduction of the Russian language in administration, courts, and education, thus replacing the Latvian language. This obviously would have been detested by Latvian nationalists. When the Russian Revolution of 1905 broke out, there was a wave of nationalist demonstrations in Latvia. Could you tell us a little bit about this period?
Russification for the first time made Latvians to be against the Russian Empire, and it was pretty humiliating to see such practices as shaming young students for speaking in Latvian, and the Russians made to wear them signs that I spoke in Latvian, as it was some kind of shame.
I saw that, yeah.
So this revolution in Latvia had double meaning. It was social revolution, and Latvians were one of the most active because, as I mentioned, we were one of the most educated people in the Russian Empire. So we had our demands, social demands, and also it was a national revolution. It was against Russification. And also the Germans, because the Germans and Russians at that time they were working together in this sense. So, but the consequence was that we succeeded, and this Russification policy was softened after that.
Good. I mean, the 1905 revolution, it wasn't a revolution as in it was successful. I don't know that much about this period. As I understand it, the Mensheviks marched on the Tsar's palace, and the Tsar put down a revolution. But I'm guessing the word spread to Latvia, and the panic, and that was a time for Latvian nationalists to sort of assert their independence. Is that kind of right?
It was difficult because the situation was that the local social democrats were also the ones who were the nationalists. It was social democrats that made these ideas of young Latvians. They developed them into political demands. They wanted Latvia to be free, national state, but as a part of, socialist federation. So it was a pretty mixed up, ideas with these people.
Yeah, it's a very complicated period.
So the queer nationalists who were not socialists, they appeared only later. And the social democrats, of course, they become more left, more radical on the left, more cosmopolite, more, internationalists. So,
yeah.
But at the start, it was a mixed up ideas,
I see. Then, after Germany's defeat in World War One, and of course Russia's defeat, Latvian independence became possible. And that seems interesting to me because it's kind of the first time where you've not got either power, Germany, Russia, being strong. They've both got internal differences, problems, lost the war. Latvian independence becomes possible. The international community recognized Latvian's independence on January the 26th, 1921. But could you tell us about the events that led up to this, such as the Latvian War of Independence, 1918 to 1920?
Well, the period that you mentioned, these 2 years, is one of the most difficult to understand in Eastern Europe. I as a student of history, for me, it's difficult to understand.
Very complex.
What happened in Ukraine, where, I think 7 armies were waging war in these 2 years. It was a crazy time, and it was interesting in Latvia also. I mentioned these ideas in the start of 20th century of the national independence by Mikels Valters, who was social democrat, and these ideas were strengthened during the World War One, when Latvian riflemen were angry and tired of the Tsars and generals for their incompetence. They were tired of war. And many of them joined the Bolsheviks, unfortunately.
The Red Rifles.
Yes, the Red Rifles. But later they quickly regretted it and they joined the nationalist forces. You have to understand that during these 2 years, the information that they got was only small fragments or propaganda. They believed that Bolsheviks would give peasants land.
Oh, yes, land and food and pensions. Yes.
So, they believed these ideas, but they later regretted that.
Yeah.
So, in 1919, these Red Latvians by Stuchka, they were in power for some time. And they tried to make an ideal communist state that even Lenin believed it was crazy what they did. So that ended in terror, and it ended in fiasco. There was nationalists with Karlis Ulmanis, and they were balancing between the forces of German volunteers who were fighting against communists and later Latvians. And They were also trying to establish contacts with Western countries. But at the start, they had a few hundred men, so they had to work with the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the time then when the most Latvians were supporting these Red Riflemen. And they were seen as this only chance for freedom. But the situation changed when this Red regime collapsed, and also this German treachery was happening. They turned against Ulmanis, and the people saw that he wasn't, you know, a puppet of them. He was
because
a real national.
Germany and Kaiser Wilhelm II, pretty much after World War I, saw the Baltic states as basically provinces, didn't he?
Yes, well, they won the war in the Eastern Front, so they wanted to keep as much of it as they wanted, as they could. So there was these volunteers that the Allies were not happy that they were here, but they said that they were just Russian volunteers fighting against communists, and under this idea they were still continuing this colonization of Germans. But the nationalist forces were growing. In 1919, 11th of November, they defeated the German forces in Riga. And it's now celebrated as a national holiday. And in 1920, the remaining communists were also defeated with the help of Poland in Latgala.
And Ulmanis, the president, or was it prime minister?
He was a prime minister at that time.
Yes. He made a unity government and he excluded the communists. But that may have been a bit later. That may have been World War II time.
Communist Party was it wasn't allowed in Latvia during that time. They were hiding behind the Social Democrats or another socialist parties, but it was a problem during interwar period. The Ulmanis was remembered as a war hero, but his fame was fading, and the influence of these socialist forces was growing, and Soviet Russia was waiting for it. So that ended in 1934 when Ulmanis made this cup when he arrested all the social democrats and took all the power.
Ulmanis is a funny figure. He's not quite one of us, I would guess, but he did some good things.
Well, he, I would say he was the one who put in practice all the nationalist ideas. So I always respect people who do things, and you could discuss whether the methods he used was right or wrong, whether he was, you know, ideologically pure or he was just a bourgeois. I think it's not that important, because what happened was that during these years, many Latvians grew up in a patriotic mode, and they were later those who fought for the independence in Second World War. They are people who are my great parent generation that we look up to. They are pretty nice people.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, example.
They supported Ulmanis?
Mostly, yes. Ulmanis was very popular in Latvia. The word Ulmanis times is like a quality sign.
Uh-huh.
Even with people who are Democrats who doesn't like nationalism. It's like a national myth, but of the 20th century. and during the Soviet times it was remembered as a golden time. You could now maybe look at it more objectively and say, well, it wasn't that good. He put nationalists also in prison. Well, there was also some corruption or things like that. But in general terms, I think they were just good times for Latvians.
Okay, thanks for that. Well, independence didn't last long, as the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact came about. In June 1940, Latvia was occupied by the USSR. During the first year of occupation, 35,000 Latvians were deported to camps, mostly in Siberia. That's the number I've got. It may have been more. Then in 1943 and 44, two Latvian divisions of Waffen-SS were formed to help Germany fight against the Red Army. Do you have any comments on these events, and how are the Latvians who volunteered to join the Waffen-SS remembered today?
Yes, I have comments. It's one of the main issues in today's national relationships in Latvia. All these Latvian legionaries, they were this Ulmanis generation, and their officers were the ones who fought against Germans in freedom fights. The question is why they did that. And it was because of this occupation by the USSR. These people were not helping Germany as they saw it, but they helped themselves. They helped Latvian people.
Yes.
And they just looked at the Germans as the only possible allies at that time. The Germans were only ones who could give us weapons to fight against the USSR, and it was good enough for us.
Well, certainly Britain and America would not have been much help.
Actually, the legionaries were waiting for the events of 1919 to happen again. We waited that Germany and the USSR would both collapse, and then England and the USA would come and help us. But people believed that even in Soviet times, when the partisans fought, only to be regretting these ideas.
Yes, because Churchill, of course, Churchill and Eisenhower was, with Stalin.
Yes, it was pretty painful for Latvians to see this, I would say, treachery.
Yeah.
And Latvians were never happy with Germans, but from the practical side, it would be wrong to say that they acted
dishonorable,
but they acted the only way possible, I think, in that time. There was just no other chance.
So today, I mean, are these veterans, Latvian SS veterans, are they remembered respectfully?
Well, among Latvians, mostly, I would say yes. People understand that those were soldiers, and soldiers firstly, and we look at them as a national soldiers, and we don't look at their uniform that they were that they had to wear. We look at them as a Latvian soldiers who fought bravely, and they did many things that people today see as a military success, as even miracles. They fought against 10 times more Russian soldiers at some battles. They were heroes. There's no other word for that. So Latvians respect them, but many Latvians are afraid to say it loudly. And the nationalists are the ones who say it loudly and who honor them. Of course, there is the other side, the Russian side, that, they live in their information bubble, so they just have another history, another idea what the Latvians were.
these Jewish groups and these Jewish organizations, they really make a big effort to besmirch the heroic actions of these men and women.
There was this Simon Wiesenthal Center.
That's right.
I haven't looked that much what they say about it. I don't care that much what these Western Europeans say about
that's what
our
I like
history.
About the Baltic nationalists. They don't care, you know, about
this. Well, they are my grandfathers, and it's all that it's important for me.
Exactly.
So, I don't know what to say more about that.
We might see some Simon Wiesenthal on the Legionnaires' March next year.
Well, they can do whatever they like. I believe it will be a nice day for us. It will be a sunny day. It will be a day when we will put flowers at the monument. We will honor our soldiers. And we will have a nice day.
Have you met such soldiers personally? Shook hands and
yes, we cooperate with their. They have this organization of National Soldiers, National Latvian Soldiers Organization.
Yeah.
We have this honorable member of our party. His name is Oskars Baltputnis. He has two Iron Crosses.
Could you spell his second name, please?
Baltputnis, like white bird. Baltputnis. He is 19.3 years old, I think now, but he is such an active man with a bright mind, and he likes to talk with our young people. He's very
and he. He wears his own crosses on the march.
He has these not the real crosses, but you know, I forgot the name.
Campaign medals.
Yes, something like that. Well, the legionaries don't like to show their you know, uniforms or things like that. Mostly they just put some Latvian flag, something like that. They are modest men. And,
fair enough, yeah. Okay, Rivas, after Germany's defeat, there was more deportations to the USSR. There was a partisan movement up until around 1955, then a long period of Soviet rule. Do you think the period of Soviet rule and the colonization contributes to the nationalist feelings amongst Latvians today?
Yes, definitely. Well, Latvians in 1990 were almost a minority because of this colonization. But the national spirit was so strong that we regained our independence when USSR started to collapse. And I believe this spirit is only stronger because of this silent resistance against anti-Latvian policies that USSR was making.
Good. Yeah, I think this is what is missing in Western Europe, whether it's Sweden or Holland. We've had this cultural Marxist, what they call a march for the institutions, affecting
yes.
everything culturally, economically, but we cannot say our grandparents were deported to Siberia, this kind of thing. So I think that's definitely within the grain of the Baltic people. It's in the soul of the Baltic people, I think.
Yes. Well, you know that the communism of USSR was a different kind of communism, especially after the Stalin. It was, I would say, more despotism, more... You know, I would say some kind of fascism, and it wasn't that international or purism, as ironically it was happening later in Western Europe. So it made resistance more stronger because the
yes.
enemy was, you know, well seen.
Understand, yeah. Okay, well, I think I know the answer to this, but on September the 6th, as you mentioned, 1991, Latvia independence was recognized once again by the Soviet Union and internationally. This was happened after the Singing Revolution. Is independence celebrated in Latvia today?
Yeah, sure. I think it is celebrated more than ever since 1991. We celebrate mostly the 18th of November, which is our Declaration of Independence in 1918. A few years ago, it was only the official events like military parade or things like that, and but now it's like spontaneous expression of patriotism among Latvians, and especially young Latvians, the new generation, who don't remember even the 1991, but they try to, make the spirit of their time themselves.
Yeah, so that's interesting. It's more the original independence, which is in November. Is that the torch lit marches which Raymond sent to me a video of, and there's about 10,000 Latvians or something?
Yes, it was 14,000 this
Wow.
year. It's one of the main events of our party. Now it's a tradition, but a few years ago it was looked as something suspicious. But now it's one of the main
So,
events.
great. So November the 18th, and you're coming up to 100 years, I guess.
Yes, we are preparing for the 100th celebration of our country.
That will
I
be a
hope
big one,
in
I think.
the I hope so. I hope that we will be the ones who are leading the country that year.
Great. Okay, thanks, Rovis. I'd like to take a short break now, and if anyone would like to call in, the number is 347-633-9657. Alternatively, you can search for renegade.broadcasting on Skype and call in that way. The break music is by Vilky, which means wolves, and the track is called Trinite. I'll see you back here in a minute, Rivis, okay? Thank you.
Sestdienas vakaru ar vien, pie treines gāju klētiņā ar vien, ir katru sestdienas vakaru pie treines gāju klētiņā ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, bet reiz pie klētiņas piegāju ar vien, un iekšā troksni dzirdēju ar vien, bet reiz pie klētiņas piegāju un iekšā troksni dzirdēju ar vien. Sēdēja ar vien, un manu trīni bučoja ar vien, tu iekšā, iekšā sēdēja, un manu trīni bučoja ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien. Ak, trīnīt manu sirds puķīt ar vien, tu solies reiz mana būt ar vien, ak, trīnīt manu sirds puķīt, tu solies reiz mana būt ar vien. Ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, bet nu tu mani pievīli ar vien, un ieškam sirdi atdevi ar vien, bet nu tu mani pievīli un ieškam sirdi atdevi ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, es došos prom uz austrumiem ar vien, tu manis vairāk neredzēs nekad. Nekad es došos prom uz austrumiem, tu mani vairāk neredzēs nekad, 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 nekad. Mēs izcīksim tos utainos ar vien, pēc tam, ko zili pelēkos ar vien, mēs izcīksim tos utainos pēc tam, ko zili pelēkos ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien, ar vien. Lai Latviju saule nenoriet nekad, nekad. Lai Latviju zovens nesarūs nekad, nekad, lai Latviju saule nenoriet. red lai laktu zorans nesarūs nekad, 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 nekad.
Welcome back to Voice of Albion, I'm Renegade Broadcasting. Tonight I'm joined by a board member of the National Alliance, Latvia. Welcome back, Rivis.
I'm still here, yes.
Good. Rivis or Rivis, I do beg your pardon. Pronunciation.
It's Rivis.
Rivis, thank you.
Rivis, yes.
I had it right then. Okay, Rivis, could you tell us a little about yourself? Where in Latvia did you grow up, and what was you doing before you became involved in politics?
Well, I grew up actually in a number of places. It was in Marupe, it's near Riga.
Mm-hmm.
It was my early childhood. Also, I lived in countryside during the summers. It was in Angure, which is near Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was one of the most important places for me because, you know, well, I spent hours of discussions with my uncle as a child. He was a fisherman, and he was an old guy who experienced the Second World War occupation and as a child himself. And so he was like a father figure for me, and we spoke a lot about these things. His father also was a legionary. I lived in Riga also for some time with my grandpa, and he was educating me in geography when I lived there. So when I started school, I was already with some knowledge and interest in the history of my country. And the early teen years, I started to form my own opinions. And once in one of these discussions with my uncle, I expressed my opinion. I don't remember what was about it. I think it's about some Russian demonstration. I remember that he said, "Well, you know, you are a nationalist." And I said, "Yes, yes, I am." I didn't know at that time what that meant, but somehow I meant, I felt that it was who I am, and I think it was that point when it all started. So I always followed politics, not only of my country, but the foreign politics. And when I became 18 years old, there was the right time for a decision what to do with my life. So my decision was the only possible to become active in politics. So that was the point when I became an activist, not only someone who has an opinion.
Yeah, good choice. All for Latvia started in the year 2000. The history of All for Latvia consists of several periods. Could you tell us of how it got started and when you first became involved?
Well, I would like to say that I could be considered one of the second generation of the All for Latvia people, because in 2000, well, I was a little child. But it was started by Raivis Cintars, which is the leader of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was started as a youth organization. It wasn't a party. It was a youth organization, and during that time it was very rare for young people to be patriotic, to be nationalists, to say it loudly, and they were the first ones who did that.
They've created quite a change then over the past 15 years.
I would say yes.
To get young people involved, wow, yeah.
I believe it is the work of All for Latvia mainly. It's many people do not realize that, but it was hard work of many years. There were, I would like to say, hundreds of events, of actions, protests that were aimed at awakening this national spirit. And after 6 years in 2006, All for Latvia became a party, and I believe it was because of the smart strategy and realistic sight of the political environment.
Mm-hmm.
Why this organization grew so large? Because there were many nationalist small parties, organizations. All of them wanted to be big, but now there is only one big party.
Well, let me come on to that, Rivas. All for Latvia joined with Fatherland and Freedom. You now stand as the National Alliance. When did this happen, and was this the beginning of electoral success?
I believe it was. It happened out of natural necessity. In 2010, I believe it was when there were local elections. It was in 2009, local elections, and in Riga, the pro-Russian party came to power, and the nationalist party, Fatherland and Freedom, which was the biggest party of nationalists at that time, and they didn't even get in the city council of Riga. So they understand that they need to cooperate with us. And also, I believe that All for Latvia was finally with the experience necessary to be part of the real politics. So the older generation of this Fatherland and Freedom started working with the younger generation of All for Latvia, and it was experience together with youthful energy and new ideas that allowed this national alliance to gain good results in the future. And now many people consider themselves only as a member of National Alliance because it's now a unitary party. So,
I think the decision to choose National Alliance is an excellent decision. Was it at all influenced by the National Alliance of Dr. William Pierce, or is that just coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence. I wasn't. I wasn't there when this name was.
1990.
I wasn't. I also started. I started to be active in politics in 2011, 1 year after the National Alliance in Latvia was formed. So, but I think it's just coincidence.
Okay. Well, it's immensely interesting to me as a British nationalist, because you may or may not know that we have had for a long, long, long time terrible problems of different groups like your All for Latvia and Freedom and Fatherland standing against each other and having arguments, and that leads to the chance for a populist party such as UKIP, United Kingdom Independence Party.
Yeah.
You see the same thing in Sweden with the Swedish Democrats, same thing in Finland with the True Finns, where you in Latvia seem to have not let that happen. Before this happens, before they bring in a mainstream populist party to take all your support, you have somehow got together, or the older nationalists have got together, and agreed this kind of alliance. And it's extremely interesting, especially being the amount of success which the National Alliance has. Now, if I'm correct, the National Alliance has 17 seats in the Seimer, or the Parliament, and one EU seat. Now, the interesting thing about the seats is, in Britain, you'll have 650, I believe it is, MPs, 650 parliamentary seats, but we've never had one single nationalist win one, unless you count UKIP, which most people don't. Whereas in your SEMA, or Parliament, what is it, 100 seats, 106?
100.
So you've got 17% of the seats, This is very, very, very interesting. Could you talk about this?
Well, national alliances, there are people who consider themselves nationalists, but they are from, in you know, all the political spectrum of nationalism. And it is, I believe, success that we can unite all these people who consider themselves nationalists in one party, that we do not, you know, start to get in these discussions without any much importance when the real threat is coming. But you have to look at the political happenings that influence this this process, and especially between 2010 and today. In 2011, the parliament was fired by the president, and emergency elections were happening, and that allowed us to gain 6 more places in parliament. And it was because we weren't like the other parties that, you know, start to work once in 4 years when the real elections are approaching, when they collect their money and put it in commercials. We were always ready. Then in 2012, there was a referendum on Russian language that made many Latvians more nationalistic and actually angry that this kind of thing could happen in Latvia. And now we have this war in Ukraine, which even more opened the eyes of many people. And all this has made the National Alliance to be necessity, because we have a clear stance on these things, and people respect that.
Who is your European Parliament MEP?
It's Robert Zila. He's part of the Conservative group, I think.
Okay. So, it's not the leader of the National Alliance?
No, we have two leaders of National Alliance. Robert Zila is a board member, and he's very important for us. But the two leaders are Gaidis Bērziņš and Raivis Dzintars.
Yeah, that second, that last name or third.
Yes.
Is this European Parliament MEP you have, is he involved in any other groups in the EU? You know, you have these larger groups, like you had the Front National, didn't want to be in the same group as Golden Dawn, and
He is involved with, I'm afraid to say wrong, the wrong group, but he was part of the Conservative fraction.
Yes.
It would be more logically, some would say, to be part of the with the Front National, but when you look what the sympathies of Front National are, well, they receive money from Putin, then
yes,
everything more difficult in the,
I understand,
the most politics.
What about the German MEP Udo Voigt? I'm not sure what group he's in.
I'm also not sure.
Yeah, not really.
I don't follow that much European Parliament.
You would have to be really on a European Parliament staff or something to be so interested. You are interested in Latvia on the ground in your region? Mostly.
Yes, but I'm also interested in, you know, geopolitics and in regional politics. But the European Parliament for me seems just too far and too out of touch sometimes with the reality.
That's right.
You know, this is time of action of some
radical,
huge geopolitical changes, and all these people in European Parliament can do, you know, discuss and discuss. But times are changing.
That's right, yeah. I was going to ask you something then, and I forgot. Yes, the Buska Declaration. Is anything coming from the Buska Declaration of Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia?
I would like to say yes, but to be honest, I think we could do much more practical. We participate in events of the Estonian and Lithuanian organizations, and it's nice to be with them. But I believe that we have to, you know, act more serious on a geopolitical level. Mm-hmm. There are
Rovis?
Yes.
Rovis, it's Paul calling.
Yes.
Sorry about that. We had a problem on this end. So, what we can do, we can continue and okay. We'll edit it out, the problem.
Okay. So, yes, I think we can continue. That's
no problem. Excellent. I was going to ask you next, have you stood as a candidate yourself, or do you plan to do so?
Yes, I was a candidate a year ago in local elections. I was elected in the local city council of Marupe as one of the 15 deputies. This year I was participating in parliamentary elections. I had some good results.
Yes.
I didn't get elected, but it was pretty close to that. So I think that's a good start for me.
Yeah. So you says you was elected at the local level. I mean,
hello?
We would call that in Britain a councillor. Hello, can you hear me? Hello, Rivas.
Yes, I can hear you, but I think there are some problems again. But
good. So did you say you was elected at a local level?
Yes, I was elected. It's one of the jobs that I do now as a deputy on the local level.
Ah. So how long is the term?
I think it will soon be 2 years that I'm the deputy in Marupe.
So you are a full-time local politician?
It's not a full-time job. It's a part-time. The main job now for me is at the party as a general secretary.
Mm. Well, that's good to have some power at a local level. I mean, how many local representatives do you have in Latvia? Does the NA have?
We have 2 out of 15 in Marupe. The question was in all the Latvia. Well, I think about 150 in all of the Latvia, but I could be wrong. The last local elections were a big success for us. We still don't have the power in Riga, but in many regions we have the city mayors and we are in coalitions. It's the situation is not that good in Latgala region, which is the eastern region of Latvia, where the Russification has made some problems for us.
Yes. What about in Riga itself?
In Riga, we were the first party among the Latvian parties, which also is success. But we are in opposition. The pro-Russian party has some good methods, I would say, for keeping the power. They learned from their job givers in Russia, I would say.
So, although you've had good success since 2010, you are still the underdog.
Yes, we are. We have. I would say fate that it's only now. These times will pass, and we will again be the number one party in Riga. But The reality is that the pro-Russian party has some strong positions there. They have some populist policies that many of the citizens of Riga like free tickets in buses and stuff like that. Mm. So it's hard to argue with that sometimes.
Yes. Economic policies are very important.
They are not smart policies. They are aimed at buying the trust of the people in Riga. And, people in Latvia are still very poor, and when someone just give them, free bus ticket or something like that, people don't analyze that why they do that. And they don't they don't analyze that it's on debt, and that in some day the city could go bankrupt. But
they've always got the IMF, right? go to the International Monetary Fund, perhaps.
I think that the people who rule Riga don't look at that side. They look at the other side.
Yes, Putin rubles.
I think it's more they are pro-Russian, so they can always ask some money.
I see.
Although he has now some problems himself, so I don't think that will work.
Yes, some interesting problems. Do you have any statues of Lenin in Latvia?
No, we... thank God we got rid of them
all
in the early 90s. We have this victory monument in Riga, which is a big problem now, 9th of May, when we allowed this monument to be there, so now it's the center of Russian activities in 9th of May. And there are hundreds of thousands of people there.
You also have your Legionnaires monument in Riga, right?
No, Legionnaires go to the Freedom Monument. It's the main monument for Latvia.
Okay. I saw some other monuments, which is like two big stones, and it had the kind of Latvia insignia from the Legionnaires. It may only be a small place. I just saw a picture of it.
It could be. There are cemeteries and small monuments in local places. There is a monument in Amore, where the big battle happened in 1944 in Lesten, in all those battle places. So yeah, there are local monuments for legionaries. Mm.
Good. I wanted to ask you, what other events did the National Alliance take part in? I've read about youth camps and various Tortlik marches, which we spoke about earlier. But, what else do you get up to on a cultural level, the National Alliance?
Well, we have a lot of activities, especially for the young people. As I mentioned, All for Latvia started as a youth organization, and we have many traditions as a youth organization. Every week we have song evenings when we come together and sing Latvian songs. We have these youth camps, not only in summer, but at least twice a year, and we come together for a few days, listen to lectures, participate in sports activities, which is also important. We care about healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
And we participate in Legionaries Day. We are the ones who make the flag alley for the legionaries that they are very happy about. And of course, the Torchlight Parade in 19th of November, which is one of the most important events for us. We gather many thousands of people there.
and it's hard work for it to happen.
Is that one getting bigger each year, the independence in November?
Yes, it's like our success in elections. It's proportional, I think.
Yeah.
It's 14,000 this year, it was 12,000 last year. It started from 100 people, I think, 11 years ago. I wasn't around at that time, but I heard the people say that it was a small event at that time, so it grew.
Excellent. Well, I read about the Latvian region of Obrini when I was studying the partisan movement following World War II. Your organization has demonstrated against Russia taking this land. Could you tell us about this?
Yes, it was, I would say, stolen from Latvia in 1944, in that way violating the peace treaty that Latvia signed with Soviet Russia in 1920. Unfortunately, this region was given again to Russia by our politicians. In 2007, they argued that it would be good for our relations between the two states.
What?
Well, we now see that it didn't help that much, because Russia respects only force and only strict language, not this kind of actions. So we protested against it, but.
Is that something you put on campaign leaflets? I mean, you know, about Obrini and this kind of thing? Because if it's that recent, 2007, it's very strange for me as an outsider to see, you know, Latvia's finally got its independence. You had all this colonization, deportations from Russia. And then in 2007, they give Obrini to the Russians. It's hard for me to understand.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because for many Latvians, the attitude, unfortunately, is why to look at the past? We should just give it and live in peace, you know, in this kind of lack of self-respect sometimes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Russia uses that, but it's only our own fault. But I think as a new generation of politicians come, this attitude will change, and we won't allow things like that to happen. We didn't allow it to happen in 2012 when the language referendum was happening, and I think it was at that time when the most Latvians just said, it's enough now, we were tolerant enough, now we are worried about these things.
Well, if you want to see where tolerance gets you, just look at Sweden or Holland or Britain.
Oh, yes. I think we have, a lot to do.
I think Latvians
to catch up
are
on them
very well-informed people, and I'm sure you see these examples, and they're not happy examples. But on that note, we were saying, there was the burning of the Soviet flag outside the SEMA. Did National Alliance organize that?
It was all for Latvia. It was around that time when the Abren was given. I think it was the same year, 2007.
Oh, right.
It was at the Russian embassy on the 17th of June. We were protesting against the Soviet occupation and the consequences of it. It's the date when Soviet forces came in Latvia in 1940. Mm-hmm. And yes, the flag was burned. And the funny thing is that our leader, Raivis Dinters, had to go to the court and to explain why did he use the communist symbol. These kind of ways that sometimes nationalists in Latvia are persecuted, and unfortunately it happens also now with these.
Yeah. Well, I walked through my city centre the other day, actually, just about a week ago, in Birmingham, which is the second city of England, and opposite the council house, there was a communist flag. It didn't have the hammer and sickle on, but it was red and it had the stars. But it was too high for me to burn it. I'll certainly support your actions.
Well, what else you could do with the red flag? I would say that.
Exactly. Well, what are the plans in 2014 for the National Alliance in Latvia?
In 2015?
15, now
we have 2 years without elections, which is pretty interesting for us because there was always something happening. And now we have this time for us to, you know, just sit and think what the party should look like and to organize it in the best way possible, because our goal is victory, and we have now learned from experience that it's not enough to be just one of the parties in the parliament, because we cannot change the system in that way. We can only do some small things. At the same time, the other parties also do their little works that are of completely different ideologies. Also, some radical liberal actions that we cannot accept. So we have to be the first party in the state.
Is there some kind of momentum to get called the Greens and the Farmers in Latvia to join you?
To join the coalition, you mean?
Mm.
Well, they are part of the coalition, but I believe that for Western Europeans and for Americans, the Greens are
a very different thing.
To
yes.
be left. In
yes,
Latvia,
yes, yes. Communist.
They are right
yes.
wing actually. They are they consider themselves to be, you know, heirs of Karl Sulmanis, who was
we spoke about
the farmer party.
Yeah, in the West, the Greens are the they call them the watermelon, green on the outside and red on the inside.
For us, some of them are former communists, you know. These Greens, but they are not real communists. They are just people who adapt to the times.
Mm, that can happen.
They are pragmatic, and it's the lesser evil.
I think
there's just no other chances. We have to work with these people. Alternatives are much worse.
Yes. When was the first? You say you've got 17 seats in the parliament, the SEMA. When was the first seat? 2010?
2010 was the first time when National Alliance was in the parliament. It was the first time when All for Latvia was in parliament. But Fatherland and Freedom has been around since Declaration of Independence. Regaining the independence in 1991.
Yes. Did Freedom and Fatherland have MPs in the SEMA when?
Well, they were the one of the main independence movements. There was this Popular Front, which was more moderate, and then there was this National Independence Movement. And from this National Independence Movement, the Fatherland and Freedom later came to be.
So how many MPs did Freedom and Fatherland bring along in 2010?
I think two. Were eight members of Parliament, and only two were at that time.
Okay.
From Fatherland and Freedom.
That's a clear picture. So what you're saying, I mean, if in 4 years you've got 17 MPs out of a possible 100, that is very promising, Ravis. Sounds very promising, yes.
But I think we cannot be, you know, too satisfied.
Oh, no.
Because we have to look more at the future. We have to look at our inner weaknesses. We have to work with all our resources. And considering the threats that are coming from all kinds of sides.
Yeah, the more success you have, the more pressure, you know, you'll get maybe political assassinations like Golden Dawn, you get people put in prison, all these things may be coming, maybe.
When you live with an aggressive neighbor, which is Russia, it tends to sometimes look like everything is okay, but then the whole hell breaks loose and in Ukraine it was nice and easy. There was Yanukovych, he was cooperating, and then just everything collapsed and now it's hell. So we have a good results, but we have to be very, very serious and very, very strategically thinking about our future.
Absolutely. How can people support your party, the National Alliance?
By joining us, by participating in our events. For me, it's more important that all the Latvians are politically aware that they are serious about the situation that we are in, that they do their best, even if they are not in party, they are just being good Latvians, they are being good citizens, they are maybe part of the National Guard or something like that. Everybody who works for our common goal is our people, I think.
What about Latvians living in America or Australia? Can they send some money or become members or something?
Many of them are members and they help us. Latvians in America and in Australia that came there at the end of Second World War are very patriotic people. And also our leaders visited them before elections, and they were greeted very well. So they help us, but I'm sure they can help us even more, because the struggle is not over. And we have success, it just means that we have to work more harder.
Yeah, what is the email address where people may get in touch?
It's info. Mm-hmm. At nationalapvienība.lv.
Okay, well, Latvians listening. I mean, I've put a link
info
to it.
Info at nationalapvienība.lv.
Yes, I've put a link to it to the show page, but obviously a Latvian person would understand that just fine. Anything you'd like to add before we finish, Roivis?
Well, I mentioned the name of Putin many times, and I think it's a worrying thing, especially for Eastern Europeans, that many in Western Europe look up to the Russia and see it like some kind of conservative hope, saviors of Europe, when it's the other way around. When you look at Moscow, you see the same immigration, you see the same pop culture, maybe even worse. And we Latvians know what the Soviet rule meant, what Russian rule meant. And I believe that the future of conservative Europe and of national Europe lies in the hands of Eastern Europe and in Central Europe, in countries like Poland and Ukraine. We will work towards that the Western Europeans won't just give up Europe to Russia, because you can run from wolf, but you shouldn't run to the bear.
Yeah.
And the saying goes.
Well said. Rovis Zeltis, thanks for being on Voice of Albion.
Sure thing. It was a pleasure, as I said.
Excellent. Best wishes to you, your family, and the best wishes to the National Alliance of Latvia.
Thank you very much. Best wishes for you also.
Thank you. I'll now play with another song by the Latvian band Vilki, or Wolves, and this is their version of Lily Marlene. Thanks for tuning in, listeners. See you next week. 14 words, and Merry Christmas, Happy Yuletide, and I'll see you in the new year.
Tas to nepriča vērs.